It's time for the Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a nationwide leader in background checks and employment screening solutions. People G2 gives their clients access to the best human capital management and due diligence tools available. They are dedicated to helping their clients with all of their people-related decisions. To learn more, go to www.peopleg2.com. Talent Talk centers on the topics of talent recruitment and management, leadership development, company culture, and employee engagement. These are all timely topics for CEOs, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, and business leaders. We hope that as you tune in to listen each week, whether to the live broadcast or to the podcast on iTunes or iHeartRadio, that you hear something you can take away that will help you grow and impact your career in a positive way. And now, here's the host of the Talent Talk Radio Show, the founder and CEO of People G2, Chris Dyer.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome to Talent Talk. We are excited to have two really knowledgeable and creative people on the show today. And I'm really excited to get their stories and to talk to them and to ask some questions and hopefully have a great dialogue today that might help us learn something and kind of deeply explore what it is that top HR leaders are thinking about. So, you know, this show is really built around this idea of us having conversations and getting stories. And I've had the privilege of being able to speak to so many different people, and whether it's at conferences, through LinkedIn, through meeting all sorts of different people in the work that I do, that I thought it would be a good idea if we had a radio show and allowed us everyone to kind of listen in our conversation. That I would talk to someone cool, someone interesting, and then I would go around repeating it to everybody what I would learn, what I talked about. And people often had different questions or different ways to see it. And so I thought, well, let's just have this in an open forum. Let's have this conversation out there in the world and let everyone in who wants to come in and hear it. So I've been really fortunate to have gotten so many great stories that I turned them into some of the best lessons that I ever learned in my first book called The Power of Company Culture. So I'd love to have you check that out wherever you buy your books online. I'm sure you can find it. If you can, let me know. I'll be happy to direct you to the right place. And we are live here every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, seeing the studios here in California. But we have a worldwide audience and have guests from all over the world on our show, which is no different today. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But a big thank you to everyone who's tuning in live, being a part of our Twitter kind of conversation. My social media maven, Sarah, kind of feeds in the best one-liners, the best questions, links to books and the guests, companies and their contact information. So, you know, as you're kind of going through the show, maybe you're not in a place where you can write something down, but you can certainly tweet it. You can go back and look it up. There's a resource for everyone. But really just appreciate everyone who comes in, even after the live show, and listens to us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast. It's over 10,000 of you a day downloading a show. So it's mind-boggling and phenomenal. And we thank you so much for being a part of it. Anyways, so my guest today, I'm really excited to bring in. We have two guests today. First one will be Deborah Hartung. She's calling all the way in from South Africa, which if you don't know from where I'm sitting today is 10 hours ahead. So it's 11 p.m. her time. Hopefully she's had a few cups of coffee and we'll keep her awake here. And she's a leadership and culture change maker and a hacking HR partner. And then we'll bring in Chris Monroe after the commercial break. She's the chief people officer, chief culture evangelicist, and HR nerd, as this is her self-given titles, over at Volt Consulting. So, like I said, she'll come in the second half of the show, but I am excited to bring in Deborah. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Hey there, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. So why don't you introduce everyone to yourself? You know, what's important for us to know about you for our conversation today? And of course, you know, maybe dive into what does an average day for your work look like? What are the things you're thinking about and helping your clients with?
You know, that is such a loaded question, Chris. Yes. I think all of us are facing the same challenges, whether it's in South Africa or the US or, you know, somewhere in Europe. And that is really how we can create amazing places where people really want to work and where they can bring their whole self to work and where they do amazing things. You know, so the way that the HR community has gone and labeled these things, you know, we call it culture and we call it employee engagement and leadership. But I think for anyone who's in a leadership role in any organization, it's really just about you know, peopling really well, I think that's the challenge for all of us, no matter where we are.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And so how does that translate into your daily work then?
So what I do as a leadership and culture change maker is, I mean, the long answer is that I help business and HR leaders to transform organizations and improve workplace culture, employee engagement, and then also overall organizational effectiveness. And I use that, you know, built around tailor-made solutions based on HR tech, people analytics, leadership development coaching, and capacity building. The short answer is that I use some really cool tech and some pretty cool tricks to help companies to create amazing places where people really love to work.
Well, that's fantastic. And maybe we could kind of start the conversation off with kind of, now we know kind of where your start, what the starting point is for you and who you are. Maybe you could tell me your thoughts on this, you know, the whole concept of a culture fit. I mean, we talk a lot about culture on this show. Obviously, it's something I'm fascinated about and I enjoy talking about, you know, and so looking at this culture fit as it relates to hiring for a culture fit, maybe this is a good place for us to start.
Okay, well, first, I don't know if it's a good place because I honestly hate that term so much.
Right.
You know, I mean, my thinking around culture fit has obviously evolved over the 20-odd years that I've been working in HR, and my thinking has changed and I hope matured. For me, culture fit is just such a weaselly way to basically say, hire more people like us. You know, it's done right under the guise that you're trying to find people who align with your core company values. And, you know, companies have these plastered on posters everywhere in their reception areas and everywhere where anyone can see them. But doing the kind of work that I do and a lot of the work that you do as well, we know that the people within those walls most of the time are not living those values and are very much contributing to toxic workplace cultures, you know. So it's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's just a phrase that I really don't have a lot of time for. And I think that it's just a way to kind of kill everything that is good about workplace culture, because we're killing diversity, we're killing innovation. Effectively, we're killing off engagement and creating a sense of belonging, because what we're ultimately doing in saying hire for culture fit is we're looking for little gray cardboard cutout versions of the people who are already there.
Yeah, and so I certainly agree with you that in the application of that term, right, it ends up going awry. And I think people intend it, maybe that this is a well-intended idea.
Totally.
That, you know, if your company has a great idea about who they want or who's a good fit, and that concept itself is fine. But to your point, which is, you know, really important, not everyone understands that. And so instead they go around looking for people. Well, I like Bob and I like Susan and I like Tim and I'm going to go find more people like them because they work hard and I know, understand what their personalities are like. And and that can be really dangerous because we miss out on diversity and inclusion. We miss out on these alternative people who think differently. We miss out on people who will bring something new to our organization we didn't even know we needed. And instead have a bunch of cardboard cutouts of the exact same five people we already hired last month, and we lose out on so much. So that term probably works for the top 0.01% who have their culture really humming and they have it really figured out. But for everyone else, I think you're absolutely right. It's just, it's a crutch almost, right? It allows them to make a simple decision based on hiring that isn't really the best thing for the company.
Exactly.
So how do we then figure out, maybe we could kind of fit this in some other way. Is there a fitting in idea here versus a belonging idea, or how do we look at this differently?
I think historically we very much misunderstood the concept of belonging. And I think finally with the rise of inclusion, equity, diversity, we're starting to see that people are really differentiating between the two, you know, because fitting in very much speaks to that gray cardboard cutout, you know your place, don't speak out of turn. That's the way we've always done things around here. You know, if you play golf and you go out for drinks on a Friday, you'll fit in just fine. Whereas I think belonging is really an evolution way down the line, and it's a much more mature approach. You know, and it really starts with diversity, because I think diversity is really the easiest thing for us to recognize in any organization, because it's dealing with a perceivable difference, you know, on the outside in terms of things like gender and race and culture. And that's just really the starting point. You know, the next hurdle to overcome is inclusion. And then we kind of start moving to the point where we're creating workplace environments where people feel 100% comfortable to bring their whole self to work, you know, and show all of their colors and nuances basically in full HD. You know, there's a local CHRO here in South Africa who had this really lovely analogy that he used to explain the three concepts, where, you know, he said diversity is inviting everyone to the dance. Inclusion is asking everyone to dance. And belonging is people just dancing and really not giving a damn who's watching or how ridiculous they look, because they know that nobody cares. And I think that's really what we should be aiming for, is effectively radical belonging.
And absolutely. And I love that. I've heard the first two thirds of that saying before, but the last bit there, I really love. That's a great kind of add on for people to really understand, because often this concept of diversity and inclusion is really misunderstood. It comes with a lot of baggage. It comes up with a lot of maybe emotional stuff going on that it doesn't even need to be. I mean, it's really about getting us great people who can think differently or add on to our company in a way that really takes us to, I think, to bigger and better places. You know, it's just been always such a surprise to me when we hire people with, like, sometimes it's just the right attitude. They don't really have the right skills. They only have the right, you know, education, or have done these certain things. The right attitude, and they kind of come in and they're, you know, they're clever and they can figure it out, and they bring so much to our organizations. And, you know, that's not easy to do for everybody. Do you think that maybe some of that resistance, or some of that, you know, areas where companies struggle, is that sort of, you know, a place where we might say their workplace culture is broken? And if so, you know, how do we begin to fix it so we can start to think about these other concepts in a better way?
You know, I think there's a lot of people who would probably take offense if we said that culture is broken, but I think those of us who actually work in the culture and leadership space, we know that in many organizations, culture is broken. And, you know, there's so much research globally and so many books and people who specialize in this. And, you know, some will say that there's really four main types of culture, and then there's other models that will say, oh no, it's seven. And for me, really, I think probably the easiest way to really explain what I mean when I say culture is broken and how we get to this place of belonging that you're speaking of. And what the belonging that you're speaking of is really not even just, you know, like we said, the outward things in terms of race and gender and language and culture, but it's also around cognitive diversity. It is diversity of thought and action, you know. The easiest way I think that I can explain it is really by referencing four colors and the Lumina methodology that I think many of your listeners would be familiar with. But back in 2014, Scott Schwefel actually did a TEDx talk called Your Personality and Your Brain. And in that talk, he referenced four main personality types or energy profiles, and he linked those to colors just like the Lumina methodology does. So basically, you get your green, which is all about people and relationships and empathy and collaboration, you know, all the good things that we're espousing in the modern world of work. Then you get your yellow, which is sunshiny and bright, and that is big ideas, innovation, growth, you know, moving forward. And then you get your fiery red, which is all about getting results and being efficient. And the final color is your blue, which is focused on thinking and logic and facts and figures, and is associated very much with introverted problem solving. Now, in workplace culture terms, effectively, we can map those four colors as well. And a blue culture is very much, you know, your typical traditional culture that seems to be, it tends to be very hierarchical, more formal, you know. That's the way we've always done things around here. You think, and this is a global phenomenon, you think about your financial institutions, your banks, your insurance companies. And then we get red cultures that tend to be very competitive. And you sometimes see a lot of the negative things coming out there in terms of politics and backstabbing and throwing people under the bus, all in the name of getting ahead. And when I say that culture is broken, I think that what we need to realize is that in any organization that is older than 10 years old, you're going to find that it's very much a dyed-in-the-wool kind of blue or red or variation of those colors. Culture in terms of the approach, the conservatism, the hierarchies, the competitiveness, the beliefs around what work is supposed to be. And then you've got all kinds of people like you and me and all kinds of other consultants getting together with leadership teams and C-suite executives around the world. And, you know, and we come up and we help them to craft their values. And when we write those values for the new world of work, we are speaking in green and yellow terms. We're speaking in terms of putting people first. We're speaking in terms of innovation and growth. But then what we don't talk about is where the company is right now, which could very much be in a very blue, hierarchical, traditional place. And what we're not doing when we're trying to then fix cultures, and that's a very big part of my work, is looking at where is our company culture right now. Let's get real about exactly where we are, not where we think we are. And then let's look at where we'd like to be. And in that gap in between, that is our journey. And that's where we really need to work with people and empower them and enable them to start seeing things differently, because effectively we're asking them to step away from beliefs and behaviors that they've possibly held dear for 20, 30, 40 years of working. You know, and to then help someone who's a little bit more conservative and hierarchical, to help them to understand what collaboration means, because collaboration means something totally different for someone who is very traditionalist in their approach versus someone who, you know, comes from a Google and more of an adhocracy kind of a culture, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And to kind of maybe full circle this back to our kind of first real question here about culture fit and this term, right, of hiring and culture fit. Do you think that there are some people that just kind of are attracted to a particular type of structure, that maybe they like more hierarchy, they like that structure, even if maybe like is the wrong word, but they're just used to it, right? That seems normal. And so I have seen companies, it's a struggle for them to want to change because they're afraid they're going to lose people if they become more innovative, if they become less hierarchical, because the employees want this consistency, or they want to know exactly what the rules are in order to get, you know, to go to from point A to point B for a project. What are your thoughts about how that kind of plays into that?
I think that you're 100% right, and I see it all the time as well. And again, if we link it to those colors, that is very much blue behavior. And you'll find, you know, if people do their luminous flash profile, you know, we're all a combination of these four colors, but we've got dominant traits, and those are very strong blue traits. And what you find in companies that are very strong blue in terms of being more traditionalist and hierarchical and all of those things, is that they tend to hire more blue people. And then when it comes to innovation and belonging, someone like me, who is, you know, this sunny yellow and quite a loud, fiery red, you know, everything about me is loud and energetic and big and bold, you know, and on some level, you know, leaders know that they need people like me. They need innovators and big picture thinkers. But as you rightfully say, they're also afraid of that. And I think it's human nature that in our opposites, we always see the more negative traits, you know. So for a blue person, they'll only see what appears to them like me just, you know, jumping to conclusions and not having considered the facts. So I think using those colors and that analogy and bringing it back to hiring for culture fit is then really about enabling people to understand these colors in a non-threatening way and to kind of be like, okay, Chris, you know, you're a blue, these are the things that you like. And when you're interacting with me as someone who's a sunny, loud yellow, that both of us adapt the way that we communicate just a little bit to accommodate the other. You know, so for me, the challenge would be, don't just blurt out my big idea, you know, maybe do some research first and bring you some facts and things because you're going to ask for that. You know, and for you, the challenge would be to not just automatically shut me down because you've never thought of this and this is not the way we do things around here.
Right. And I love that way of thinking about it. I mean, I often really suggest that people try to do more of their work inside of teams and allow different groups of people to kind of self-form and come together and be in a group, allowing different people to be managers, to be part-time leaders, right? So they can, often people don't want a full-time leadership position, but they're happy to show up and to be on a team and lead a team about something they have high interest in or that they really are excited about. And to your point, I never would have categorized it with the colors or explained it the way you did, but there is that give and take of, what does this group look like? Who are the people in the group? How can we be going to communicate effectively? And am I going to have to change a little bit? Because, yeah, my personality could completely overtake this group, or vice versa. Someone else might say, I'm going to need to speak up more often. I'm the one who knows a lot about this. I'm going to have to make sure I'm there to provide that information. And so
exactly
inside the smaller context, it feels like it works really well. It's a good, like a hack. That, you know, you can be so much more effective than when you're trying to do it in these huge groups and this huge sort of hierarchy of I don't know, power plays and whatever else, where it's easy to get lost and it's easier not to get anything done, right?
Yeah. But for me, I find if we fix it on the micro level and we have, you know, tens of these little teams who are working really well and they get this whole color thing and they understand this in a non-threatening way, that it does scale really well. You know, because we can replicate it. And what happens is you and I work together on a team and we learn these things. And then on the next team that we're on, we're like, oh, you know, I learned this really cool thing and this is what we did. And I think it is something that can duplicate and scale and that can be used really effectively within even the largest of organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I know that you also, I'm not sure if this is the same methodology. You have a DIRC methodology that you use. Is that the same thing as this color or is this different?
No. So the colors is Lumina. Lumina is a whole big company in the UK and you can go and look them up. They do amazing stuff. So the DIRC methodology, that's all me. That is that's a really simple yet effective, agile and totally customizable performance management methodology that really enables you as a manager to not only measure what I do in terms of my output or delivery, but also look at how I go about achieving those goals. So, you know, specifically looking at the context of my interpersonal relationships, living the core company values, and what contribution I'm making to innovation and growth within the company. So the DIRC, the D stands for delivery. That's our old school, how much of what by when, you know, that's the stuff that we always tend to measure people on. The I is for innovation and growth. And in that realm, you can really look at me from the perspective of what am I doing to improve efficiency and effectiveness in the organization? You know, what am I doing to commit to my own learning and development? And what am I doing to help the company grow? relationships, obviously, the R, we're talking there about interpersonal relationships with my colleagues and with clients and whoever else. And then culture, of course, is where you can literally go, and there's some amazing tech out there, where you can go and actually measure to what extent I'm living the company values. You can get my peers and my manager to actually measure me on those things.
Right. It sounds fantastic. And despite my terrible introduction of it, but certainly the Jerk method sounds like something that companies can really think about implementing or using in a simple way that can really help them, along with what you shared with the colors. And those are really some very, very, I would say, approachable things that you can do to really help your people and help your organizations. You know, as if they're looking, if companies are looking to make some sort of change or need some sort of a, I guess, a baseline on how do we move forward. We've talked about so much, and I want to make sure that we have an opportunity here, as we have, we're almost out of time, to ask you two important questions. And the first one is there a book that you're reading or something that's been kind of exciting you lately that you might want to tell us about?
I'm reading a couple of books, but the things that I'm most excited right now is anything that I can get my hands on around belonging, inclusion, diversity. So I'm excited about those things. I can't specifically reference a book for you that's really changed my life right now. I feel pretty bad that I can't do that. but I'm very much following the work. If anyone wants to follow the work that Mike Vacanti and Kevin Monroe and them are doing with Humans First, that's kind of growing globally right now, which is amazing to see. So I'm very excited about that. And then from a technology perspective, I'm very excited to see what the folks over at People First are doing. They're a UK-based HR tech company. And then obviously I follow everything that the guys at High Five and Team Fourier and Culture Amp and also Direct Suggest are doing. Direct Suggest is a startup in California that's really reinvented the old suggestion box. So learning, you know, new technology and new things that my clients can use, that always gets me super excited. And then anything relating to making the world of work a kinder place is a sweet spot for me.
Well, I love it. And those are all great things I'm hoping our audience can check out. But most importantly, I hope they come and check you out. So what's the best way for them to find out more about you, your work, and how to find you?
Chris, people can just reach out to me on social. I'm everywhere. I'm Deborah Hartung. They can just go and look it up. Or they can contact me through my under construction website, which is deborahhartung.com.
And in case you are ever name challenged like I am, her last name is spelled H-A-R-T-U-N-G. That way you can find her. Hopefully they do. And I really appreciate you being on the show today. I even more appreciate the fact that you stayed up so late to be on with us today. You know, we didn't get to this, but Deborah was such a great help to me when I was in South Africa with all of your wonderful suggestions on where to go and what to do. So hopefully I can come back at some point and I'll see you there. But and love to have you back on the show because we have so much more to talk about at some point.
Thank you so much, Chris. I look forward to seeing you.
All right. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break, and we'll bring in my second guest, Christine Rowe.
Imagine buying a newspaper and discovering that the news you're reading is 6 months old. There isn't much that stays the same for 6 months. And the same thing goes for background checks. In a time when so much outdated information is being passed around, it's good to know that People G2 offers something different. At People G2, we provide today's intelligence, not yesterday's news. Our value-added approach offers you a fully FCRA-compliant solution that includes up-to-the-minute information. By combining industry-leading technology with old-school human investigation, People G2 is able to give you information that is accurate right now, delivered quickly to our online system or integrated with your HR system. So ask yourself, are you comfortable working with old news, or are you ready for a different kind of background check company? Visit PeopleG2.com or call 800-630-2880. That's 800-630-2880 or PeopleG2.com.
OC Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Talk Talk Radio Show. In case you missed my last guest, don't worry. We're going to have it up on our podcast, which you can find on talenttalkradio.com. You can find it on iTunes, on iHeart, on Stitcher, wherever you you find your podcast, you'll be able to listen to the last guest and my next guest, Christine Rose, the Chief People Officer, Chief Culture, and I can never say this word right. I was just mess Evangelicus. So, and then HR Nerd. I'm just messing it up. I mean, if I don't mess up someone's name, I'm messing up someone's title. So, I've just done it.
Everything HR.
And HR Nerd, which is even, you know, I love that term. And you're over at Vault Consulting. So, and don't forget, we'll be live tweeting this right now at People G2. And you will hear everything, and it'll be written correctly because someone else will write it for me. But Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Christine, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone about yourself and, you know, what's important for us to know about you and our conversation today.
No, absolutely. So, you know, I love the term HR nerd because I just really, I mean, I'm not one of those types of people where it's like the titles mean that much to me. It is really about, you know, really focusing on the people. And I always tell people that I really want to enjoy coming to work. So why wouldn't anyone else want to enjoy coming to work and do their best work? So I have been in HR for a long time. I remember the days of when people used to apply for, you know, there was an ad in the newspaper and you mailed in your resume and the type of paper you used was extremely important. And, you know, so it's been quite a while and things have definitely changed. So I think, you know, one of the most important things that I like people to know about me is that, you know, I really like to listen and learn. I don't really think in my role as HR that I know everything. It's not about me always knowing everything. It's about how we can always work together as a team to do the best work.
Absolutely. And I love the way you phrase that. And so how does that translate into what you're doing at Vault Consulting?
You know, so Vault Consulting is actually a kind of a dual company. It works with nonprofits and associations to do outsource accounting. And then we also do research. And it's a fairly newer company. And the leadership recognized that they wanted to bring someone who had the HR expertise to, you know, really build. They had been outsourcing it, ironically. And so they really wanted to build that function as they were growing and really have someone here that they could bounce that off of and really build the systems and build and be current and making sure that we have the right systems in place and the right ideas in place. We just completed an engagement survey for the first time, so that was really exciting, and now we have some data. And, you know, one of the things, you know, it was really important. I remember they said, you know, oh, you must be really excited that we got this done. I am. I'm extremely excited, but it's not done. I mean, it's just one step. We always should be looking at it. We always got to be looking at what people are telling us. It's not about just, you know, doing a survey and being done with it. It's like, what can we do and take this data and really be actionable about it? So, you know, it's really exciting.
Well, and that's a really great way to look at it and kind of doing those specific things at the right time for clients. And often clients don't know when it's the right time to bring someone in to help them. And my answer usually is, you've already passed that right time. You need to hurry up and do it now, if they're asking that question. Maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, leadership and HR. So how important do you think it is for leadership to kind of be in sync with human resources, whether they're the in-place team, the consultants, the leaders of HR? How does that work in your mind in a perfect world?
You know, I think in a perfect world, it's actually not that complicated. I mean, if they're not in sync, if, you know, you think about, you know, if you travel and you're going to a foreign country and you don't know the language and the person can't understand you, it makes it so much more difficult to get around and to get what you need, even just the basic things. So you're always trying to find that common language. And I think it's the same with HR and leadership. I mean, I think, you know, they really have to be on the same page. I always tell people there's no, you know, HR, there's no right or wrong way, actually, at the end of the day to do HR. But what can get really messy is if, you know, HR is not in sync with leadership. If HR comes on board and says, this is the only way to do it, you have to do it this way. Or if leadership doesn't understand why they're even bringing HR on board, they think it's just something we need to do. Or they just throw around the term, we need to be more strategic. But they don't know what that means. And so you end up speaking different languages and you end up in the same place. You might have a, you know, snazzier, you know, ATS or something, but you don't really truly progress. And it just really makes it really frustrating, I think, for both leadership and HR and probably both.
It can be complicated for companies, especially if they wait too long, if they haven't started those conversations sooner, if they haven't started to deal with some of these things. And often it feels like it's the human stuff that we neglect the most. And I don't know if that's because it's the stickiest. Is that because it's, you know, we're trying to avoid a confrontation. And yet, you know, it gets to that boiling point, and then suddenly we need help, and then, you know, they bring people in to help.
I think all of that. And I also think that people are usually a company's most expensive resource, right? And so it becomes really expensive to have people coming and going. And, you know, especially nowadays where a company's reputation, just like with anything, gets reviewed really quickly, can be really spread, you know, and so it becomes much more public. But I think that, you know, HR and leadership being in sync, it's really important as well to be really strong and really, you know, stick with who they believe they are. Because it's not about pleasing every single individual. I mean, not every single person is going to be a good fit, is going to love working at a certain company. That's okay. That doesn't mean we need to change everything based on that one, you know, particular situation. We always have to keep kind of like the eye on the prize type of thing. And I think we tend to focus on these little micro situations and try to manage that way. And that's why I think you end up running around in circles as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, often there can be a disconnect or kind of being out of sync with what maybe the strategy that HR is taking and trying to handle the complexities of this and to maybe what new thing leadership is doing or not doing, whether that's they've got the next big idea, the next big innovation, or they've just had their head in the sand, right, and are pretending that something isn't going on. But there often can be that disconnect. What is it we can do about that? And you know, to kind of get everyone talking about it, to get them back into sync, well, how do we solve that challenge?
I think what's really important is to, one, I think it's really important for HR professionals to really get to know the business and understand, you know, what makes the business tick so they can speak that language. You know, really, you know, when you're relating with the leaders of a company or even the managers, it doesn't have to be the leaders. You want to be able to know what those challenges are. You have to be able to understand. Coming on board and just making a bunch of suggestions is really, you know, you're shooting blind as to what's going to work. And then really developing those relationships with the CEO, making sure you listen to his ideas as well instead of ramshotting, saying like, you know, this is the only way, or we have to be on this best places of work to work list. You know, just really understanding what do we want to achieve? What problems do we want to solve? Where do we see ourselves in 10 years as far as a company? And there's not always a right or wrong answer. It's what fits for that company and what we feel comfortable with, because it's important for both HR, leadership, regardless, that we wake up in the morning and we're proud to be where we work. I don't ever want to be in a situation where I'm trying to be some company that we're not, or we're trying to do something that doesn't fit. So really building that trust and that relationship with the leadership. And knowing, you know, you're not, you know, just because you're the head of HR or HR, whatever, you're not always the smartest person in the room. You don't always have the best ideas. I find with HR, everyone knows a little bit about HR. Everyone has an opinion about HR. Everyone reads all the same articles and sees all the same LinkedIn links. So it's really, you know, it's really about being open and listening and being that partner.
Yeah. And it's a really good reminder that, you know, often people are exposed to all these ideas, and maybe you have leaders that are thinking about culture, they're thinking about their people and leadership, but they're not maybe consistently working on it or consistently in the practice of it. And so they can come in with a million ideas and you know, they've read five things on LinkedIn today that sort of tell you that it's important, but don't really give you the nuts and bolts of how to do it. And then that's really where HR can really be a big assistance in that, and laying that groundwork, laying that foundation. But that kind of then that leads to the next thing, right? So if you're trying to have those people in your organization, you're trying to figure these things out, you know, who then ultimately is responsible for the recruitment process in your mind? Because it clearly then becomes, you know, do you feed the right people in, or is HR just trying to feed the right people, the wrong people out all the time because that's messed up? Where do you fall on that question?
You know, for me, recruitment belongs to everyone. I really believe that you have to build a recruitment culture, that it is really about everyone connecting with people. You know, your people, your staff, they're the ones that are out there. You know, every person, you know, when someone with your company speaks with someone and says, you know, either they like where they're working or they don't like where they're working, they're recruiting. They're getting the message out because people do remember and take that. Now, as far as obviously processes and making sure it's running smoothly, yes, I do think that's a really important HR function. But I think it's really important, even from HR perspective, that it is really a partnership. I don't think that it is really effective when HR acts as a gatekeeper with recruitment. It is really about building relationships and really understanding, you know, who are going to be the best people for the organization. And every single candidate you talk to is going to be slightly different. You know, you're going to see something different than whether they're going to fit or not fit. And it's not about, you know, I'm the best person at this, right? There could be multiple different ways that you can find candidates, and we really literally are all in this all together. That's why I do think it is like having, you know, I'm not against referral bonuses, but I think they're important and we do them as well. But I don't think it should be about referral bonuses. I think it should be about, I really enjoy working here, and, you know, this is what I say about it, and I want, you know, people who are also really good to come work here. It's a bit simplistic, but it really, you know, I really do strongly believe that we're all really truly recruiters.
I have a friend who brought in another friend into their work, and a few months into it, that friend who had just been hired said, "Why in the world did you ask me to work at this place? It's terrible." And my friend said, "Well, I got $500 for it." And I couldn't stop laughing.
Terrible.
I was like, "You can't."
I'd be angry.
Just one of the $500.
That's a terrible.
Yeah, I mean, so my other friend was very angry, and that, you know, yeah. But
no,
I went, wow,
so
okay,
true.
None of that for me. There is a time and a place, and there is, you know, but it was amazing.
You're totally true. And I know some companies will be like, well, we'll give a higher bonus if it's this or if it's that, or if you can really vouch for the person. And I feel really strongly that it's just about making that connection, you know, making that referral, mm-hmm. bringing someone that you really think could be a potential fit for the company. Because I think really deep down inside, a lot of people don't really like to have their best friends come and work for their organization. So you want to be able to, you know, really open it up and make sure that people are able to, you know, really build their networks and get the word out too.
Absolutely. And so, you know, if we're going to maybe counter some of that, does that mean we need to be better at our recruitment branding? Do we need to be doing, you know, more to create that employer brand and put that out there?
You know, employer branding has been, I really do, this is horrible, but I think it's become such a buzzword. I think it's become a thing that especially in today's economy where people think it's a lot harder to find candidates, they see employer branding as being a solution to a problem. Now, I'm not against it. I do think it's really important to, you know, you don't want to be hiding under a rock. We live in a social media world. We do live. Everyone needs to be conscious about this. But I think it's really important to be careful and know where that line is and not go over it and not oversell, not overbrand, not overdo it.
Yeah, I mean, you want to make sure that...
Yeah,
we want to make sure that that employees can understand who they're coming into, right? Can understand what especially if you're not an employer of choice. Not everyone can be, you know, one of the top 10 or can be the number one in an industry. Not everyone can be that. But if you're trying to scratch your way up, I think making sure that your branding and that your story is aligned so that people can understand what you have to offer. But you're right, on the flip side, we can overdo it and we can oversell it in a way that kind of can just set people up for frustration and disappointment if they walk in and think they're showing up to something that it's not. We often talk a lot about what we do as a company from an accomplishment standpoint, but we also make sure people really understand this is a totally remote company. We're 100% remote. There is no building for you to walk into. And for some people, they can't wrap their heads around that. Other people, they get it, and it's fine. But we have to be, you know, as upfront and honest as we can with them that there isn't a central time zone for our company. We don't all work in one place, and you have to be able to digest that to work here. And that's, I don't know if that you would agree that that's partly going into the branding, right? Going into that, developing that story is to
Absolutely.
Make sure people understand.
Absolutely. And I think here, particularly here at Vault, where we are looking for accounting professionals who, and we don't require that they be from a professional services background, but we want to make sure that they're clear as to what the realistic picture is and, you know, why people really do enjoy that and what they learn and what they get from it. But what are some of the challenges? We always want to make sure we balance both. And one of the things I've said here is that we get a lot of candidates who actually drop off voluntarily, and that's okay. You know, we've built a relationship. Things do change. They may know someone who this would be a good fit for, but I'd rather be honest and them know, because that's not going to change. I mean, it's not going to change once you get on board that suddenly, you know, oh, well, this is what it really is, right? Because there's nothing worse than finding out from someone that a position is not what they expected, because the chances of them staying, I think, decline.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just had a really good conversation with Deborah, the first guest on the show today. We were focused a lot around culture, so I thought I'd give you your shot here to tell us what you think about culture and how important that is in companies, and maybe where you're sort of putting that focus or that energy in your work.
Oh, I do think culture is really, really important. And I think with all the books and all the LinkedIn articles and all the attention to it, that it almost, you have to talk about now authentic culture to some degree. I do think it's important that companies decide who they are and who they want to be, and then get that message. But I do think it is, you know, some of it is organic. I think it is difficult to sit there and say, well, this is who we want to be, while ignoring who we've been. And it takes time. I mean, I think culture is always evolving, but I do think it's really important that, you know, a company draws a line in the sand and says, this is who we are, this is who we want to be, and this is what we're going to drive for. And if people are, you know, if we have people that are starting to chip away at that, then we need to address that, and we need to make sure that we're recruiting people understanding this is what we expect. If we have an expectation that we do work really hard, you hear that a lot, work hard, have a lot of fun, you know, really describing what that means for Vol, or describing for what that means at another company, so people aren't surprised, because it may not be what they see the culture of the company that they want to be part of. So I think it's incredibly important. And this is where I think you can, you know, we talked earlier about where HR and leadership can be disconnected. I think some of that can be about culture, you know, is where we think this is what we want to be, the shiny new penny, but this is not who we really are. And we're ignoring who we've been, and that can really alienate people who have built a company. So it's really important to, you know, really feel strongly about who you are. And I think that's kind of the same as when we reflect on who we are as people, right? Companies need to do the same.
I like your term of the authentic culture, right? Because everyone has a culture, whether you're intending it to it or not, or whether it's, you know, intentional or unintentional. You know, it's what are the norms? Right. What are those things that we do here as a company that make it a norm? How do we operate? How do we move around? How do we communicate? And then what's the permission look like, right? Do I have permission to do this thing or not? And if I need to get permission, how do I get permission, right? So I think those are the two biggest concepts around culture. And, you know, if it's a bad culture, the norm might be you get yelled and screamed at, or you don't get permission to do anything. We have to kind of look at that in the right context. But having an authentic culture, having one that feels a bit more connected, that feels in some ways the right one for you, that where you can go in and make a difference, and you can navigate those norms and those permissions to be effective, is, I think, probably the I guess maybe dream is the right word, but certainly a top desire for employees, and certainly for managers and leaders. That if you can set that up well enough that people can navigate that and they don't need you for every little decision, and they can do fantastic work and surprise you all day long. And that's always my hope. I don't know if that is, if you would agree or disagree with sort of that conclusion of where we would take that thought on culture.
I do. And I think what you've described hit two key things that I think companies really struggle with is communication and trust. You know, regardless of what, you know, who you are as a company, everyone's going to have a different take on, you know, depending on what their business is and where they've been. But those, I think, always come up continuously, especially when you are talking about disconnect or where you want to go, you know, communication and trust. You know, you don't want to, you know, you want to be able to be agile. You want people to be able to make their own decisions. You want all these different things, and this is what you say. But the reason I think that it can really erode quickly is because you don't really have that trust, or, you know, you do something that, you know, people realize, oh, you don't really trust me to be able to work at home 3 days a week, or whatever it may be. So you do have to be careful about that. You have to really, you know, really start from a place of trust. I firmly believe it's kind of like my son in a classroom. I mean, he doesn't get to go out to recess because one person didn't, you know, talked out of turn. How fair is that to everyone else, right? And I think we kind of have grown up with that. You know, one person ruins it for everyone. Well, doesn't make sense. I mean, just because one person does something doesn't mean we can't trust everyone else. And that's where I kind of, you know, alluded to where you have that one person can actually also really erode that culture as well. You know, so you do have to send that message and really can't overemphasize that communication. When people don't know what the expectations are, and we just assume they do, that can cause a lot of problems as well and really erode on that culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so vital. It's so important. And, you know, unfortunately, I think sometimes people just don't know how to fix it or what to do or what mechanism to bring in to really help them do that. But, you know, often some of my best ideas come out of the books that I read. And I'm wondering if there's a book that you're reading right now or maybe you've recently finished and would suggest people check out.
I was hoping that was the one question you wouldn't ask me. No, I haven't read anything recently. I'm so behind on my reading list. I can't believe I'm going to admit that, but I'm very behind on my reading. So no, I just, not recently. I have a long list though.
I had to create a hack just to read the book. I had such a stack on my dresser that I started having a monthly book club just so I was forced to read at least one book a month, and that's gotten me in a much better habit of reading them on a regular basis. But I no judgment here. I went years with them sitting, just piling up, and my wife saying, I think I'm going to throw this stack out now. You're not going to read this?
Yeah, so. I looked over to my bookshelf, and I thought, I've got books on my shelf, but I can't honestly say. I was thinking there was one book, but I was like, geez, how long ago did I actually read that one? It's like, okay, I'm not going to mention that one. It would be dating myself, actually.
Well, how can people get a hold of you and find out more if they're interested in the work that you're doing in Volt Consulting? What's the best way for them to do that?
They definitely can look me up on LinkedIn. I do use my middle initial. I'm Christine Ebro. I'm definitely very open to communication. Or they can also reach me via email at cro@vaultconsulting.com. I'm very open to, you know, having conversations with people and collaborating with other HR professionals.
And we'll put a link to her LinkedIn profile and her company there on if you're following us live on Twitter. So go to @PeopleG2. You can see it there if you didn't have a chance to write that down. And she does spell her last name R-O-W-E in case you needed that help. But thanks so much for being on the show today and contributing so much. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you come back at some point and give us an update on all the great things you're doing. And maybe you'll have gotten to one of those books and you can share up with it as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I always love it.
All right. Next week, let's see, we'll have our next live show on February 25th. Our guests will include Jeff Blanton, author, speaker, and podcaster, and also Nick Cavuto, founder and CEO of Cavuto X, Inc., specializes in social media marketing and digital marketing. So until then, do what you love and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio, brought to you by People G2.